You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. I'm in the studio this month with my usual co-hosts, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, and today our guest is Debbie Martin, and she's director of Clatsop In-Home Care. We're going to be talking about the topic today of caregiving, which is something that a lot of people within their families do for older family members, but also it's a profession, and we're going to be talking about how you can get help if your family needs a professional caregiver. So thanks for being here, everybody.
Thanks
for having us.
So this is a very interesting topic, one that's kind of close to my heart because I have a almost 97-year-old dad who has caregivers, and I am partially his caregiver. But it's a really important role that people play in one another's lives at this time of when you have an elderly relative or family member. So, Debbie, why don't we start with you? Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and your job and role and what caregiving is about?
Well, I'm the director of Clatsop Care Center's in-home care program. That was established in 2005. We do everything from meal preparation and housekeeping all the way up to end-of-life care. So we have, in our agency, we have caregivers, we have companions, we have a registered nurse that oversees the medication services as well as wound care and, different things that come up that require delegation. We have CNAs. I mean, this is what we do.
So can you tell our listeners the difference between a caregiver, a companion, and a CNA? Because that all sounds like, wow, what are those things and why would I need them?
Well, CNAs are certified nursing assistants. They've got the actual certification from the Oregon State Board of Nursing. Caregivers are, they provide personal care also, such as showers, personal hygiene. They also can do medications, non-injectable medications. And then companions basically do meal preparation, housekeeping, safety supervision. They do transportation back and forth to appointments. And the registered nurse, like I said, she oversees all the meds and wound care and that. We work with a lot of other entities. We work with, side by side with home health. We work with hospice.
So people can come to your organization and say, hire someone.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the, we've talked on previous shows about the, that there are a lot of options here. A family can find a friend, they can put an ad in the paper, mm-hmm. and they could go to an organization like
right.
yours. Why would they choose to go to an organization like yours instead of maybe some of those other things? What they obviously get something. You vet people and
right.
you know what their education is.
The way the process starts with my agency is it starts with a screen, which is where I go to the home. I actually meet with the client, the potential mm-hmm. client. I meet with the family or their representatives. It could be a friend. And then at that point, we sit down mm-hmm. and we discuss exactly what is needed. And from there, you move out to what days would be good, what times would be good. I explore the home, the environment, so that we know what we're able to use and not use, and then from there you match up caregivers to the needs. You can have 20 caregivers, but if they don't meet somebody's specific needs, you don't want to set them up for failure and send somebody that's not appropriate. So that's kind of how we start it, and then we just show up, we do what we're supposed to do, and we have service plans, care plans. And then the caregivers, they're licensed, they're bonded, they have workman's comp, they get background screens, and then they're also supervised. I mean, if you haven't committed a crime, you haven't got caught, anybody can pass a background check. So they still need to be supervised. They need to go through ongoing training. You need to make sure that they are still doing the things that they're supposed to do appropriately. So it's their supervision. We're on call for our clients also, so if their needs change or something happens in the middle of the night, we try to help them out. An example would be a spouse caring for somebody. If the spouse goes down, they may need somebody to come right away so that they can take care of what they need to take care of. It could be just about anything. There's really no black and white when it comes to caring for seniors or people with disabilities or injuries.
Let's see, Michelle and Doug, let me just ask you a couple questions about what, do you get a lot of requests for caregiving, Michelle, at Northwest Senior and Disability Services?
Oh, yeah. That's probably one of our primary things that we do there. So some of our folks will be able to get in-home care services through our Medicaid program. We have another program called Oregon Project Independence that some of them can get paid home care workers through that. And then we have a smaller program called the Family Caregiver Support Program, and we can offer some respite time, some money for paying for somebody to give them time off. They can, in that program, they can use anybody. They can use a friend, family, or what, like with Debbie's program. And we can help reimburse up to $400 a year for time off. The other two programs have a little higher mark as far as eligibility goes, but they're also really good options. If a person qualifies for Medicaid and get in-home care, it's based on their care needs and the number of hours that add up. And again, they can get high-quality caregiving services in their home.
So what Michelle's talking about, she is works with Northwest Senior and Disability Services in Oregon. So this is the Oregon piece. Doug, let me ask you, you're on the Washington side of the river here. What kind of programs help people with this, with caregiving?
Well, we have some of the same Medicaid in-home care programs that they have over here because they're federal Medicaid dollars. And the caregiving situation is pretty much the same. I mean, you can have agency caregivers. You can have what we call IPs, which are individual providers. And what they do is they contract through us with the state. Again, the background checks, all of that stuff go into place. And they are sort of the employee of the client. The client oversees it, yet we supervise the whole case to make sure everything's working. They have to have the background check. They have to start with 70 hours of basic training. Then they have to have 12 hours continuing education training and all of that. They become certified through the healthcare authority in the state of Washington as home care aides. We rely pretty heavily on the agencies over there, just like Glossop Care over here would be in Oregon. We have several over there that are that provide caregivers. And again, they have to have the background checks. They have to have the training. The difference with the agencies and the individual providers is the agencies, if that caregiver, something happens, because things happen in our lives, the agencies are able to send in a substitute, someone to replace it. If you're just a sole person independent in that home and something goes south, then that client is scrambling to find a caregiver. Sometimes it works out very well. Sometimes it might be the client's daughter or son that is the individual provider, so it kind of works out all right. But both of them have to have the same training requirements. They have to be certified by the healthcare authority. They have to have the background checks. They have to have contracts and all of that too. So we have basically the same thing, different things. We're just, as we were talking before the show, we've just been crying out to everybody out there in radio land. There's a profession out there called caregiver, and it is a profession. There are the unpaid caregivers that are family members, like you mentioned, Joanne, and we too have a respite program where we can provide respite for that family caregiver to get some time off. The difference in Washington is we can only use agency caregivers. We can't use individual providers for that particular program. So they're really similar. The best thing to do is give us a call. And when, if you're just out there looking for, maybe you can afford to pay your own private pay. The agencies that we're contracted with for Medicaid also do private pay. Plus there's other agencies in the area that aren't contracted with us that only do private pay. So we can give them a list and let them know what's going on. We can't say, this is the very best one, choose this one, because then it hangs on us if it's not the best one.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
But we can give all the options and talk people through it. There's also, you mentioned people putting an ad in the paper, which I really always try to discourage. It's just, it's like putting a bullseye on your forehead. But we do have a book called How to Hire In-Home Help. And it has a sample contract in it, has a Washington State Patrol background check form, talks about interview questions, talks about scheduling. So there are helps available, and I'm sure Northwest Senior and Disability Services has information on that too. So people aren't going out there blind to just, you know, hiring somebody like that. So there's all kinds of options. But as you mentioned, the caregiver now is really a skilled professional. And I think historically people think, oh, well, you know, they're just somebody in there helping out and it's okay. And I really don't, you know, but it's a skilled profession. They have benefits. They have a lot of things going for them right now. So it's a good job opportunity if people are care about people and are looking for work. And well, can pass a background check.
Sure.
Throw that in.
Sure. Well, we'll get back to the idea of it being a profession and how people might get into it in a minute. But if you're listening and you're wondering about, we'll give contact information at the end of the show on how to contact all the agencies represented here so that, you know, if you are looking for someone to help you, you know, I know that being in the position of many people here, I have an elderly dad, and the idea of bringing a stranger into our house, into his house when I wouldn't be there, was really intimidating because you're taking this precious person, all his belongings, his banking information that could potentially be compromised by somebody that you don't know. So the idea of having these agencies that we can, you can trust that their people have been vetted is a really, really good way to go. So, but let's talk a little bit about the idea of this is a profession that needs people to enter it because there aren't enough caregivers. So, Debbie, can you talk a little bit about what the needs are for more caregivers around here?
The need is great for all kinds of caregivers, actually. The wages have gone up. I mean, wage used to be a big issue. They used to be not paid very well. There's been a lot of changes as far as caregiving requirements now, so you have to pay for that. If you want quality people, you're going to have to pay for quality people. Our agency offers educational opportunities also because we want people to continue in this profession, not just start out as caregiving, but we have some caregivers want to go on and become certified nursing assistants, and so if they want to do that, we encourage it. We get it set up. We work through Clatsop Community College, and we put them through that program, and we pay for that. And then
wow.
They have guaranteed work when they come out. If they still want to go on, we have other educational opportunities, such as scholarships. We've actually had people start out in home care, work up to a CNA, work up to a nurse, and the director of nursing. So you can actually make a career out of caregiving.
So what kind of educational background would somebody have to bring to this? Does somebody need a bachelor's degree when they go into this program with you? Or what are there any educational requirements that someone has to have?
We like them to have a high school diploma or a GED. And that's for home care, you know. And then as you go up, your requirements will go up. I mean, based on what you want to take at the college and what they require.
Well, so one of the things that I've noticed in caring for my dad is that, you know, it requires a certain amount of physical effort because you're dealing mm-hmm. with a person who may or may not, I mean, who may weigh more than you, be bigger than you, who might need to be physically moved. So how do people learn techniques to do that? Or do you have to be able to lift 50 pounds or any of those things that you sometimes see in job ads?
Well, you have to be able to train them to do this. There are body mechanics involved. There's simple knowledge of hygiene and wound care. Them, all this stuff you teach them, and a lot of times people will learn as they go. Different caregivers have weaknesses and they have strengths. So that's part of trying to figure it out from the beginning when you meet the client, what would match up to their needs. Some of my caregivers are retired. So some of them are not able to do heavy lifting transfers. So of course I'm not going to send them to that kind of a client that needs those. And then I have others that are very capable, very strong, and more than willing to go out and do this. So when you are matching people up, that's what you want to take into consideration, is the weaknesses and the gifts, the talents versus what those needs are. You don't want to send just anybody out.
Well, so when you're sending, so I'm thinking about questions that I would have if I was coming to you. So when you say you supervise people, how do you do that when the people are essentially out of your sight in someone's home? How does that work?
You actually go and do site visits.
Oh, okay. And ask the people how things are going. And
yeah, you could do that in person. You could do it on the phone. I pop in when the caregivers are there unannounced. Families often will call, and they know that everything is confidential. So part of the training that the caregivers go through is that they don't get their feelings hurt if somebody wants to try somebody else. You know, your personalities have to go together also. So families often will call and say, hey, can we talk about this? I really like what's going on in this area, but I'd like to tweak it and make it something different in this other area. So that's, you know, it's all part of the supervisory process.
Okay. So so then how do you, I mean, the other thing that I would think would be, somebody would be worried about is someone stealing from them, which is the issue when you put an ad in the paper and you get somebody who's essentially a predator who ends up in somebody's home. So how do you reassure people about that, that's not going to happen to them?
Well, there's no guarantee. I mean, it happens. There's no guarantee that won't happen. But as a supervisor, it is your responsibility to supervise your employees, to attend work. I have attended workshops on how to spot potential problem employees. There's warning signs that somebody could potentially become a problem. You just have to watch. But more importantly, when somebody reports something to you, you do have to listen, and you have to take that very seriously. And then you have to do an investigation. And there have been instances where I've actually had to have the police come in and investigate something because I'm not a police officer.
Right.
But every concern or complaint like that is taken very seriously.
So let's talk a little bit about the costs to people who are doing this. When we're talking about Medicaid, but Medicaid is income related, right, Michelle?
Yes,
and Doug?
And yeah. Assets. Yeah.
So if your income is too high, say, a person's income, and they need to pay for it themselves, what is the ballpark for what it would cost somebody to bring a person in, say, for a month? It probably depends on what services they're getting.
Right. Well, we do private pay, but we also go through the VA. The VA also we have veterans that are also our clients. The VA will assign somebody so many hours. There are long-term care insurances. A lot of people have long-term care insurance where they will be evaluated by their insurance company, indicating how many hours they qualify for, and then we'll work around that. A lot of times people just don't know where to start, and so they'll call me and they'll say, gosh, you know, we just want to be gone for a weekend. You know, we don't mind taking care of mom. We're not having a problem, but we need to go to a wedding in Eastern Oregon. And I'll steer them over to Michelle because I know that she's got the Family Caregiver Support Program, and that could be a big help.
Okay.
I mean, there's just different options out there. A lot of times if somebody's in the hospital getting ready to be discharged home, a discharge coordinator from either one of the hospitals here can also steer them in the right direction.
So is it, in general, overall less expensive to have someone come into your home than to put someone into a facility where they're being cared for? I don't know.
I think it depends on how much care they require.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So the family, Michelle, can you talk more about the family caregiver support?
Sure.
Just a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that program is available for unpaid family caregivers. So for the primary caregiver, usually they're taking care of mom or dad or their husband or wife. But it can be a neighbor or friend too. It doesn't have to be a relationship. It can actually be to whoever that primary caregiver. If they're unpaid, we want to talk to them. And the idea is that there's so much stress involved with caregiving that this just gives them a little bit of an outlet. It also gives us an opportunity to talk to that person about other resources. So it opens the door so that we get to know them. It also gives them things like the $400 I talked about earlier for respite. And that's on a fiscal year, so at the end of the fiscal year, they get some more money put into it. They also have access to professional counseling, so they can go up to 6 counseling sessions and have our agency pay for that. And they get a little bit of supportive services for things like incontinence supplies or safety equipment can be purchased through that program.
Okay.
So it's usually our first step with a family. It's, you know, how are things going? What kind of help do you need? Another logical step may be that, you know, this is how you spend down to get to Medicaid. This is what it looks like. Our Oregon Project Independence has a waiting list right now. We hope it'll open up again. But it's usually the one in between family caregiver and full-up Medicaid. There's usually... The standards aren't quite as rough to get into on Oregon Project Independence. But when that opens up again, it's a wonderful program to have. So there's some good services available there. We certainly want to talk to them. We oftentimes will go into something called options counseling too. And that is a time that I can spend with the family or the person needing the care to go through all the different kinds of care that are available. So not just in-home care, but what are the other levels of care? What does assisted living look like? What does adult foster care look like? And then when would you look at a nursing facility for long-term care? When is that necessary? And the costs involved with each one. And then also how to be a good employer. And that there's that other piece of it. I mean, we're talking about the employees, what they need, but to be a good employer of a home care worker is important too. So having a good structure like through an agency is a good thing, but sometimes people are hiring independently, independent workers on their own. And how do you prepare for that? How do you figure out what tasks need to be done? What kind of job description needs to be written up? Is there an application you want to use? How do you prepare your home? You know, so are there some things that you absolutely would just die if it left their home? So if you have some real sentimental value things, high value things, well, maybe it's time to move those. You know, put them in a safe location, have one room that you lock everything into that people don't access. If you're thinking about giving things to your kids, maybe it's time to think about that. Maybe it's time to do that. And who's going to help that person if they aren't able to totally supervise the situation? Is there a family member that can help supervise and report on the situation? So those are all important learning factors that we get a chance to talk to people if they'll come talk to us about family caregiving.
So, Doug, is there a program comparable to the Family Caregiver Support Program, those services that Michelle was just talking about?
Yes.
It's kind of a spectrum of services. Is there comparable things in Washington?
It is, and it's been growing quite a bit in the state of Washington. Back when Medicaid was in jeopardy and they didn't know and some programs were held, the Family Caregiver Support monies in Washington State continued to increase. They finally discovered that, you know, maybe intervention is less expensive than someone ending up in a nursing facility. And so they've thrown a lot of money into it. And we just recently, this last year, had two more pieces added to the Family Caregiver Support Program called MAC and TESOA. It's the Medicaid Transformation Project, and it marks the first time that Medicaid has put money into the Family Caregiver Support Program. So they're recognizing, too, that this is really beneficial. And the workings of it is similar to over here. It's about the caregiver. You do a screening to find out, you know, how much stress you're really under. Are you losing your identity in this? Are you still the spouse, or do you feel more like a caregiver and then maybe the spouse is out there someplace? And we offer counseling and respite, and we've done gym memberships and all of that because we're trying to keep the caregiver healthy enough to continue doing what they need to do.
Yeah, well, I think that just seems like, I think most of the time, you know, having been in the position and being in the position of a caregiver, you sort of tend to feel like you're all by yourself. And that they're,
right.
And so the idea here of this show is that just go find out what your options are. You know, you have people that you can go sit down with who know this whole situation way better than you ever will and will be able to talk to you about what your options are. So let's see. Let's go back to the idea of this as a profession. Debbie, let me ask you that. What would you say to people who are listening to this who might want to try it?
Caregiving can be caregiving itself can be really a rewarding career, and it's changed a lot through the years. I mean, it's a profession.
Yes.
We're not glorified babysitters. We're not emergency care teams. I do occasionally get a phone call that says I need somebody tonight, and I have to explain to them that it doesn't work that way. You know, we need to keep things professional. We need to make sure that everything is matched with what their needs are. There's educational opportunities. There's complete, we have medical coverage even for our mm-hmm. full-time employees. If they are working at least 30 hours a week, which they do, they not only get a decent wage, which is way above minimum wage, but they also get full medical benefits, you know, medical, dental, prescription coverage. They get, they have access to have 401ks. I mean, we have all of that, scholarships. So it's an actual profession.
Mm-hmm. So let's just go back a moment to the idea that maybe there are people, even with this help, who are helping out the parent anyway or the family member anyway, even in addition to all these services, and they're, and it's overwhelming to them. What kind of emotional support services are there, say, in Oregon? Michelle, start with you.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about the professional caregiver benefit that's available through the Family Caregiver Support Program. And I really encourage people to take advantage of that. That makes perfect sense. But then it can be followed up or even can coincide with going to the support groups. And we have two Alzheimer's support groups in our area that I'm aware of, one at Clatsop Care Center and then one at our office. And then we also have a regular caregiver support group at our office. So it'd be best just to call our information assistance line and find out the times for those.
Okay, great.
Also, just online, there are a lot of online support groups that are interactive that you can talk to other people that are doing this. So if that you just really can't get out to get support, you can find it online too.
Okay. And Doug, how about on the Washington side?
On the Washington side right now, we have the Alzheimer's support groups. We're working now. We just got a new family caregiver support coordinator, and he's working on redeveloping the caregiver support groups over there. So if anyone's listening to this and is in this situation and would like a support group, give our office a call because we're in the, just now building those back up in Pacific County. And so there's a lot of need out there. Some people really need the support but can't really relate to the Alzheimer's support group. Others, they just, you know, they want support however they can find it.
So somebody could Google, say, caregiver support and find a lot.
They're going to find it.
Right.
Okay, great.
And that's both state and national will be on there.
Okay. So it seems like I'm just always amazed when we do the show how much help there is for all the things that we talk about, that people just don't have any idea how much help there really is available. So we're at the point in the show where we ask people to give contact information. So Debbie, can we start with you? If someone wanted to call your agency, would they call you directly or would they go through, say, Michelle's agency to get your services?
No, they can call me directly.
Okay, so what is the contact information?
So my office is located inside Clatsop Care Center, which is on 16th Street. Mm-hmm. The phone number for my office is 503-325-0313. And my extension is 225.
And is there a website or something that people could go
to?
Yeah,
we do. Yeah, okay. There's clatsopcare.org.
Okay, great. And Michelle, what about you, Northwest Senior and Disability Services?
Probably the best contact is calling our Aging and Disability Resource Connection line, which is 503-861-4210. And that person will do an initial screening and be able to direct the person to the right worker in our office to make sure they get the right support.
Okay. And and then a website, did we do that?
Oh, yeah. It's nwsds.org.
Okay. And Doug?
For our Raymond office in North Pacific County, the contact number is 942-2177. And in the South, in Long Beach, it's 642-3634. 360, of course. And our website is www.o3a, and that's the number 3.org.
Okay. And I also want to say that this, after 10 years, is Michelle's last show with us. She is retiring. Hooray for you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. We've learned so much from you over all these years. So you have been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I want to thank all of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next month on A Senior Moment.